So Pesach's on its way, as we're all, I'm sure, very aware of at this point, after Purim. I wanted to discuss, as many weeks as we have left, so we'll have to figure out when everyone has to take off and focus more on Pesach and the physical preparations. But as much time as we have left, I'd like to discuss Pesach. Minhagim of Pesach are actually, you know, there are many. And this is actually, I think, the one area of halacha where there every family seems to have, you know, their own set of minhagim. It's a yomtif where, both in terms of preparations, in terms of the Seder, in terms of the Chumras, in terms of everything, there's so much to be discussed. And it's something that's unique in that every family, every community, really has their own special take on Hagim Pesach. So it's something which we can't hit everything. But it's good to get sort of a broader sense of the Minhagim and the different practice we have over Pesach and understand them better. I think that the fact that we have so many Minhagim actually very much fits the model of the day. Pesach is really about passing on the Mesorah from one generation to the next. The Seder is meant to be where you teach your children about Emunah, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and coming along with the teaching of the story is passing on tradition. And of all Yomim Tovim, the Yontif that has the most things passed on from parent to child, from generation to generation, really is Pesach. We really see it that way, we feel it that way, we experience it, and it very much fits the nature of the day. So nobody has as many minhagim when it comes to Sukkot or Shavuos or Shabbos as they do for Pesach. Pesach is everything of the Seder. This is how we did it. This is how my grandparents did it. My great-grandparents did it. This is my community does it. This is what I eat. This is how I eat it. This is when I eat it. No Yontif has that. I think Pesach is unique in that fashion. Again, it fits the mold of Pesach, which is passing on from one door to the next. Traditions, minhagim, beliefs, emunah, hashkafas, that's what Pesach is all about. So with that introduction, I want to share with you just a brief thought about the month of Nisan. Chodesh Nisan is a month of Simcha. We spoke about this a couple years back in depth, all about Nisan. But it's a month where the whole month is permeated by the joy, really, of Pesach, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. I may don't realize that we just had Purim. And the Gemara says, Mishnah's Adar Mar B'Simcha. We all know the idea of increasing Simcha in Adar. But Rashi tells us in that Gemara, it's because of this of the Nes of Purim and Pesach. So Simchas Adar doesn't stop on Purim. It goes all the way through Nisan, if not even further. And the Simcha of Adar is just the beginning. Really, it should increase and increase and increase, you know, through Pesach and beyond, because this is a season of joy. It's a season of Geula. From Purim to Pesach, you're celebrating two major Geulas in the history of Klal Yisrael. And that Simcha should permeate the month. The month of Nisan is a month where we skip Tachanun the entire month because of that joy. The whole month is permeated by that joy. The name Nisan itself suggests the Lashon of Nes. Nisan is a Lashon of Nes. I want to share with you an interesting idea. This Haggadah I got this year. This is actually a very popular set of Sfarim in Eretz Yisrael these days, called Umasoka Or, by Shlomo Levenstein. He's kind of like a modern-day Maggid. He tells all sorts of stories. Really, he's become a very popular speaker in Eretz Yisrael. So he now has dozens of Sfarim out from him. So I bought this Haggadah when I was there a few weeks ago in Eretz Yisrael. And it's loaded with stories, you know, some more pertinent to topics, some not as pertinent, but it's a lot of really nice stories and ideas about Pesach and in general topics. So he talks here about the name of Chodesh Nisan. You know, if the month is all about Nisim, so we can call it Chodesh Nes or Chodesh Nisim. Why is it Chodesh Nisan? What does the word Nisan mean? So those who remember from a couple years ago, the names of months are actually Babylonian names, so the question itself needs to be understood in a little different context, but there's no coincidences. And if we're willing to refer to this month by the name Nes, there must be some reason why it's called Nisan. So he quotes here from the Pasuk of Parshas Vayelech. It says in Vayelech about the Torah itself. It says, Lo me'ever layomhi. Torah is not found across the ocean. And the meaning being in the Pasuk, the Torah is right here with us. You know, anybody can find Torah within themselves. You don't have to like start going across the ocean and climbing buildings. It's all within. It says, "Beficha vavcha lasoso." It's in your mouth and your heart to do. So Chazal say you don't find Torah lo besachranim v'tagarim. So you don't find the people who are sachranim, people who are merchants, excel in Torah. That's the words of Chazal. So he says, I have a question. We find many, many great gedolim who ran businesses and were gedolei ador. He quotes, for instance, you know, the Chai Adam, who was one of the great, you know, halachas farim of recent times. He was a merchant. He had a store. The Chavetz Chaim had a store, and he gives a list here of people who were merchants and were gedolim. So what could Chazal mean that you don't find Torah amongst Sachranim? What does that mean? A little bit Hagranim. So he says that the answer is very simple. He says that you have to understand the language being used. There's something called a socher and something called a sachran. A socher is someone who runs a business. He's a socher. A sachran is someone whose business runs his life through and through. Now he lives the business. The business lives him. He lives the business. It's all about the business. So a socher is what I do. I happen to sell things. A sachran is what I'm all about. That's me. We say in Yom Kippur, Hashem is a salchan l'Yisrael. The machon on the shift of Yeshurun. So you could say that Hashem is soleach, he forgives. What does it mean he's a salchan? It means that Hashem's nature is to be forgiving through and through. So, and he brings other examples of this. We call somebody in yeshiva who's a top bachar a lamdin. He doesn't just learn, he's a lamdin. Because lamdin means the learning takes him through and through. Mm-hmm. So Nisan is not the month of Nisim. It doesn't mean that Nisan happened to have miracles during the month. It's Nisan, like Sachron. The month is permeated. It's defined through and through as a month of Geula, as a month of Nisim. So that's why the word name is Nisan. So the Chodesh Nisan itself is set apart to be a month that's totally consumed by Nisan. Like Chazal tell us, we are redeemed first in Nisan, and the future redemption will also happen in Nisan. It's a month where we look forward to redemption throughout Nisan. So that's the month of Nisan. So we're going to start to get to some of the minhagim of Pesach. So we have a minhag called Kimcha de Pischa, that we want to give out special tzedakah before Pesach for Aniyim. The truth is we had on Purim Matanos of Yonim, and every Yomtiv there's an idea of giving tzedakah prior to Yomtiv. But Pesach has a special mitzvah called Kimcha de Pischa, and there's halachas about it. If you live in the city, you're obligated to do it. How long you've been in the city, who's considered part of the city. There's really a whole slew of halachas that are relevant to giving Kimcha de Pischa. So the question is, why is Pesach unique in that its mitzvah tzedakah sort of is set apart? It's not just like it gives tzedakah for Yantif. There's a special mitzvah called, or a special minhag called Kimcha de Pischa, defining Pesach. And I guess to add to the point, when it comes to every Yantif, there is an obligation upon every Jew to take care of the Aniyim. It's really, the Psukim say it, that you have to take care of the Ger and the Almana and the Yasum, Asher B'Kirbecha. And the Rambam actually has a very sharp description of one who doesn't fulfill this mitzvah. The Rambam says in Hilchos Yomtiv, he says, Chayv Adam Lios Behen Sameach V'Tov Lev. So on Yomtiv, a person is obligated to be happy, V'Tov Lev, and good-hearted. Hu, Banav, Ishtov, Nevanav, he and his children, and his wife, and his grandchildren, Chol Nivam Alav, and everyone who comes to everyone who's with him, everyone who comes to the table. As it says, V'Samachta B'Chagecha. Then he says, even though the Simcha of the Pasuk is referring mostly to karbanos, there's an idea of bringing simcha to each other as well. So besides the karbanos, which we can't offer these days, we have to be sure that we're happy, we have things that we like, we make sure that everybody's provided for, in terms of our family. And then he continues. So you want to give, he says, give kids what they like, give the women what they like, the men what they like, so everyone should get what they like. And then he says, keshu ochel v'shosa, when you're eating and drinking on yantif, you have to give it to the ger, the convert, the yasum, the orphan, the widow, along with all the other aniyim who are downtrodden. And then he says a very sharp line. If you lock off your courtyards, and you eat and drink, you and your children, and your wife, and you don't give to the aniyim, nefesh, and to those who are downcast or downtrodden, Einzu simchas mitzvah el simchas kreso. You're not celebrating a mitzvah. You're celebrating your stomach. That's the Rambam. It's a very famous quote of the Rambam. So if Yom Tif means that I'm just sitting there enjoying myself, so you can't say I'm doing a simchas shel mitzvah here. I'm celebrating Yom Tif. No, you're celebrating yourself. You're celebrating your stomach. You have an excuse for a good meal. If you be sure that you include within your meals those who are needy, those who are downtrodden, you make sure before Yomtiv, you give out to the poor to make sure they're cared for. So then you can say it's a true Simchas Yomtiv. But if you're not caring for others, so then it's just an excuse to feed your stomach and have a good time with yourself. And then it says, Al Eilu Nemar, about these people who don't care for the Aniyim, it says, Zivchem Kelechem Onim. Their karbanos are like the bread of mourning. Kochav Yitamu, all of their food is defiled. Kilachmam Lanafsham, because their bread is for themselves. And he continues on with some more psukim describing how bad it is to care for yourself and not care for others. So this is the prerogative we have before every yontif to be sure the niyam are taken care of. So every yontif, there's always tzedakah campaigns going on in cities. You have lots of letters in the mail. And it's appropriate. Before yontif especially, if you're going to create for yourself a beautiful yontif table with delicious foods, you have new clothing, you have the simcha in your homes, Baruch Hashem, so you have to be sure that we also share with others who don't have. So that's for every yontif. So then, on Pesach, though, there's another obligation, a unique obligation called Kimcha de Pischa. And we actually mention at the Seder, we say, Kol dichvin yesei veichu, all that are hungry should come and eat, all that are needy should come and do Pesach, so we extend a special invitation to aniyim. So what's the reason for that? So one simple reason is because Pesach is expensive. You know, we all know how much more expensive Pesach is than other Yom Tovim. You know, that the prices are from here to there. You know, that's what it's like. But there's a deeper point here. The deeper point is that, you know, everybody on Pesach deserves to feel that sense of chirus. And Pesach is about freedom. Pesach is about that we as Klal Yisrael are Hashem's children. We are kings and queens, princes and princesses. We are free, noble people. And somebody who unfortunately is poor, who can't afford to have a beautiful Seder meal, can't afford to have new clothing, it's very hard for them to feel that feeling of being a king or a queen when they're impoverished. So at least for the Seder, at least for Pesach, we have to be sure that we extend a special amount of help to those who are in need, so they can also feel what Pesach is supposed to give to all of us. The truth is that a Jew who's poor is still a prince or a princess, is still a king or a queen. The Mishnah says all Jews are considered princes and princesses. So some people unfortunately can't afford to dress that part or eat that part, but it doesn't take away from who they actually are. So on Pesach, when we're trying to feel that feeling of chirus, of nobility, of royalty, we have to be sure, especially at that point, the aniyim are taken care of. And there are some who point out that when we call out Kol dichvin yesev yichul, that's also a measure of us feeling like nobility. Nobility doesn't have limitations on who they can provide for. So I make sure I provide for others, and I invite others in to show that your nobility, I'm nobility, we're all B'nai Chorin, we're all free, and we all experience the great Nisim of Pesach. So this is the idea of Kimcha de Pischa. There is a minhag, which you know many have, to refrain from matzah before Pesach. And just to clarify, there is a halacha, an obligation, not to have matzah on Erev Pesach. That's a halacha. That's not a minhag. No one's allowed to eat matzah Erev Pesach. That's this. Basically, the concept is that you're spoiling your fun. You know, you're spoiling the. You're not going to go into Pesach, you know, excited about matzah we just had that morning. Chazal gave a description. It was like somebody who's intimate with his wife before they get married, basically. So it's you know, you're about to get married and you're intimate with your wife prior to getting married. That's the description. So that's Erev Pesach. I mean, in the morning, Erev Pesach, it's aser lahalacha to have any matzah. For those, you are allowed to eat that morning, you know, egg matzah, or matzah which cannot be used for your mitzvah, so that'd be fine. Also, boiled matzah, k'nei lach or mutter. If you have, brach is a separate discussion for those who have that minhag, but k'nei lach or mutter, certainly before this month, after also if you have brach. So, because matzah which is boiled cannot be used for your Seder. Egg matzah can't be used for your Seder. But regular old matzah, or matzah meal products that are baked, which potentially could have been used for your Seder, cannot be eaten lehalacha Erev Pesach. Now there are those who have minhagim of extending that further. Some from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and some from even from Purim. Well, for refrain from matzah from Purim already. And that's based on minhagim. The Mishnah Berurah brings down the minhag of Rosh Chodesh, as he says some refrain, he doesn't tell you have to, but some refrain. And the concept is again, that you want to be able to have some sort of appetite or excitement for matzah at the Seder. We'll all say, matzah is cardboard anyways, what's the difference? But the answer is, if you're quitting your house for Pesach for a few weeks, and you're trying to get rid of all the chametz. So what do you want to eat? Okay, so I don't want any bread in my house, it's going to make crumbs, so I'll start eating matzah right now. Mm-hmm. So the answer is, well, when you get to Pesach, then is it fresh? Is it exciting? You're going to sit down for your mitzvah. You're going to make a bracha, Alchios matzah, and take a bite. We just had matzah, you know, yesterday morning, and the day before, so it doesn't really create much excitement for the mitzvah. So in my mind, it's actually a very logical minhag, because, you know, we all are all tempted to, you know, it's a convenient thing to have around when you're praying for Pesach, to eat this lunch of the matzah. Especially with the kids, like, forget about it, I don't want to give them any chametz, that's for sure. So that's why there's a minhag. So again, it's based on your own personal minhag, what you do. Some don't have a minhag, some from Rosh Chodesh, some from Purim, But the concept is to enter into Pesach with some sort of excitement, freshness, appetite for the matzah. Erev Pesach, again, it is aser, not based on minhag, based on halacha, but before that, it's mutter halachically, but there's a minhagim to refrain. The next thing I want to talk about is one of our favorite topics, which is cleaning for Pesach.
You're hired.
Yeah.
That's your favorite topic.
Yeah, right. So I don't want to, again, this is not really a full halacha shiur. I'm not getting into halachas of cleaning. You can ask your rabbi those shilas. But I want to, so again, frame it in the context of what's a chiyuv, what's a minhag, and what's everything else, basically. I'm going to put it in that framework. So let's just maybe discuss what is your mitzvah de'araisa from the Torah of getting rid of the chametz. What's our obligations, and then what are we doing, which is kind of above and beyond. Let's just put it in those general categories. Again, specifics, go ask your rabbi, but the general categories. The Torah prohibits possession of chametz on Pesach. It's called bayirah, bayimatze. You can't have it seen or found in your possession. So, in other words, you can't possess chametz on Pesach. It can't be in your home, it can't be in your possession. The Chazal required us to do two things to accomplish this. Something called bittul, something called bir. Bittul chametz is the decoration we make, Erev Pesach, that everything is null and void, like dust of the earth. That's called bittul chametz. Bir chametz is search and destroy. We do a bedikas chametz on Erev Pesach, but beyond that, a proper bedikas chametz requires that our house is ready to search and destroy. So number one, you're making a search and destroy party. That's the bedikas chametz. And you're also doing bittul, which is nullifying the chametz verbally. Those are two obligations. From Chazal, the Rabbanan said, we have a mitzvah d'oraisa not to have any chametz, so we want to give you two methods you have to do to get rid of the chametz. That's where that comes from. Those two methods are required for the following reason. If I just did bir, if I just search and destroy, and don't do bittul, there's the risk I miss something. So, I did my bedika, and I happened to forget to look under the couch, and then on Pesach, I moved the couch, and there's a donut. So some say there's a concern you might come to eat the donut, which if it's moldy on the couch, you may not. But there's also the concern that you're going to take it into your possession. It's not a donut. Let's say it's a bottle of whiskey. Let's say it's a box of crackers unopened. It could be on Pesach. You'll grab it. Someone will grab it, eat it, or you'll take it, put it in the pantry, and you'll take possession of it. So Chazal said, number one, you search and destroy. And number two, you might miss stuff. So do bittul, nullify it verbally. So if you were to find it, it doesn't belong to you. But nullifying verbally is not enough because you may not be serious about it. If you have a cabinet full of 25 bottles of expensive scotch worth $10,000, and you're going to say there, yeah, dust of the earth, it's worthless. So if you're a big tzaddik, then maybe you mean it, but most of us have trouble meaning that. So Chazal said, okay, so you have to search and destroy because we can't trust that bittul is going to be heartfelt and sincere. So those are two steps needed. We have to do bir, we have to do bittul. The way you do bir chametz, searching and destroying, is you have to actually search your house in an effective way. If your house is dirty, if it's full of stuff, if it's full of crumbs, if it's full of who knows what piles up over a year, then it's very hard to do an effective bedika, because you're searching through the house, but you're searching through piles of stuff, you're searching through crumbs and dirty floors and dirty cabinets. And so we have the idea that we're supposed to, the halacha is supposed to clean before Pesach in order to enable a proper bedika. So that's where cleaning comes in. So cleaning comes in to make a proper bedika. That's where cleaning comes in. The amount of cleaning that we do, most of us, may be sort of above and beyond that which the halacha requires. I mean, the halacha requires that we do bedika, so we have to make sure the house is ready for bedika. The way the halacha actually says it is like, okay, so tidy up a little bit on Erev Pesach, and then everything will be fine, right? Now, we have to put into context, our homes are certainly much larger than the homes the rabbis are talking about. I mean, in the times of the Gemara, they said we had one or two room houses, it wasn't, much. And number two, I think that we have a lot more just stuff in the house to deal with. They didn't have so much stuff. Also, the food preparation was done in their days mostly outside, not inside. So you understand when Chazal talking about cleaning, that their homes are much smaller and less food went into the house, and less, there's less stuff to sort through. That's just to put that into context. On the other hand, there's another issue as well, which is that anything which could come in contact with food is an issue regardless, because if one crumb falls into your Pesach food, there's no din of bitul b'shishim on Pesach. Now, usually during the year, if tray falls into my food, if there's 60 times the volume of that tray food, I can eat the food. On Pesach, there's no din of bitul when it comes to chametz. So we don't want to have any chametz potentially in any area where food could be, because you know, one little crumb goes in, then I have a problem. You know, I have one little spill and I touch it in my hands, I touch my food, then I'm eating chametz, and that's a problem. So in food areas, you know, as thorough as we are, makes total sense. Halacha makes total sense. Because any area, a dining room, a kitchen, those areas where food's going to be, there's definitely a concern that there's crumbs left over from the year which may end up on your table or in your food. That's for sure. The question is, when we're scrubbing the rest of the house, you know, where does that fit in? And again, and the point of that is to be sure that the house is ready for bedikah. That's where that point comes in. Chazal only require bedikah in a place where chametz would have gone during the year. So, if you have a house and you never ever bring chametz up to the bedrooms, ever, and you don't have any little kids running around who bring chametz everywhere, so then there's no chiv to do bedikah or clean the bedrooms. No chiv at all. If you are the type of person who eats all over the house, or you have little kids who run around carrying stuff everywhere, so then you have to clean everything because the chametz could be anywhere. So everyone has to look at their own homes and decide, well, which areas in my house could chametz have entered into, which areas not. And the Gemara's example is even, it says that if there's a wine cellar, that maybe you'd send down the waiter during the meal to get wine, and he may be holding his food as he goes down, that should have bedikah. So that's the example we're given. So anywhere you may have walked during mealtime, it's possible you'd be munching on something as you walk down there. Anywhere in your home where you would have brought food in or stored food, so that certainly needs a bedikah, which means it needs a cleaning. But anywhere in the house which food was not brought during the year, you never bring food there, and you have no reason to think food got there, then you have no reason to do a cleaning or bedikah, la halacha, on that part. So that's, I guess, putting in the context of the halacha. Now, there is certainly, I would call this a minhag Yisrael, which is to clean. You know, scrub everything. Part of that is probably going overboard, because it's not time for spring cleaning. Your goal is just to get the house ready for Pesach. On the other hand, there is definitely a lot of sources to talk about the chumrah. We call it chumrah sada pischa, you know, how machmir we are on Pesach. And I want to kind of explain where that comes from a little bit. In terms of cleaning up, even crumbs, again, unless it's getting to my food, crumbs don't even matter. Most poskim say you're looking for significant pieces you might come to eat. So my job cleaning up lahalacha would be just sort of, you know, going through the cabinets, maybe sweeping a little bit, vacuuming, but scrubbing for sure not. Every little crumb doesn't really matter. But many of us, you know, and it's not just us, I mean, it probably goes back generations, you know, we clean like crazy getting ready for Pesach. So where does that come from? So I would call it, there's certainly a minhag Yisrael to be extra machmir on Pesach cleaning in terms of so to Pesach food, which is a different discussion. So where does this come from? So I want to share with you a few points. The Shulchan Aruch talks about people would used to scrape off their chairs and tables for Pesach. He says there's no obligation to do that. I mean, you always just clean them, like scrape them down. But he says there's definitely what to rely upon for doing that. It's not crazy to do. And the Ashar Tzion says, you know, Klai Yisrael is kadoshim him. Klai Yisrael is kadosh. And we're machmir even on tiny, tiny bits of chametz. So this comes from a concept of Yisrael kadoshim him. You know, we're so kadosh. And even though halacha may not require such extensive cleaning, there's this idea of it being an extra measure of kedusha of Klai Yisrael that we're machmir even on a mashahu. Just to read through some other examples of this. There's a sefer called Nitei Gavriel. It's a modern-day halacha sefer, and he has in his introduction a whole section called Chumros B'Pesach. And why are people so machmir on Pesach? Like, why do we have so many Chumros? So he quotes here from what I quote in the Shulchan Aruch, this concept of scraping the tables, and how there's this idea of Yisrael being Kadoshim Him. He says that there are... where is it? Here it is. He quotes from the Minchas Elazar, the Munkancha Rebbe, Zatzal, that he was sitting there once on Pesach with 50 or 60 Bachrim at a Seder. Imagine a Seder of that size, but a very large Seder. He's in the middle of Shulchan Orech, and one of the Kalim fell to the ground. So there is a Chumrah on Pesach, which many may keep or are aware of, that anything touches the ground, you put away after Pesach. You ever hear that one before? There's a chumra like that. Because maybe there's a crumb on the ground, and it touches the crumb of Pesach, so you put it away, there's a chumra like that. So he, so a clearly fell to the ground, and the Munkacher Rebbe, he said, put it away, it's after Pesach. And then he went ahead and he said, Al tazalzel b'chumro shnogin Yisrael Pesach. You should never, ever degrade, you should never disparage the chumros that we have on Pesach, even to be careful of a mashahu of chametz. He says, I'll tell you a story. He says, this happened. I heard this from my father, who heard it from the Shinova Rebbe, and he received this story from Rav Chaim Sanzer. So this is an old Hasidish Shemaisa, going back many generations. Hear the story from the Rapshitzer, that before he went in, so this is the Rapshitzer story, he enters into the Chozom in Lublin. So these are all, you know, great Hasidish Rebbes, you know, really the early ones. So he went into the Chozom in Lublin for the Seder, and many of the great Talmidim and Tzadikim were gathered around. Everybody brought their wine to the table of the Chozeh. So the Chozeh Lublin entered in. He said, we can't start the Seder until you remove one of these flasks of wine. So one of the people had brought a bottle of wine. He says, get that off my table. So, and then they started saying Kaddish after he removed that bottle. So this Talmud was very, very, he's taken aback. Why did he disqualify my wine? Like, my wine's kosher. I watched it myself. What's the problem? And he couldn't understand, you know, why is it that the Chozim Lublin would not start the Seder until this wine was removed. So they got the Shulchan Orech, Pasach V'Amar, the Choza came to explain himself. And he said, I'm going to tell you something. He says, why did I command to remove the wine from the table? And even though this wine was made with all the Chumras and all the Hidurim, it was kosher wine, Betachos HaKashrus, he says, and it was guarded for Pesach 100%, when you put this bottle on my table, you'd put it beforehand on a bench. And since that bench was a place where I would place chametz all year long, and there was nothing separating between the bottle and the bench, I don't want to use that bottle on Pesach. And even though, you know, it was in a bottle, and it was cold, and there was really no concern at all for what you're talking about, he says, I saw that in the spiritual worlds, this created a pagam. This created some sort of flaw or blemish in the spiritual worlds. So he was someone on a very high level who could see such things. But the point of that story is to show that even though sometimes halachically we don't see any reason to be concerned, on Pesach every single little bit does count. The thing that we call discusses more from the Meshech Chachma talks about how when we were Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, we know that one of the reasons we were saved is because we kept chumras. Meaning, Klai Yisrael Mitzrayim was not all that great. They did a Avodah Zarah. They weren't considered to be, in terms of their mitzvah observance, you know, of any great level. But we know Chazal tell us, you know, they didn't change their names or their language or their clothing. Meaning they kept certain chumras to separate themselves out and away from Avera. And therefore, being the Klai Yisrael was saved based on their siyagim, their fences and their chumras, so to Pesach, we create lots of fences and chumras as well. That's a Meshech Chachma. He brings down a story here as well from, is it? From the Kedusha Levi, Rav Yitzchak of Berdichev, that he says that when people scrape their benches and their chairs on Pesach, and act with such chumras, he says every single scrub you do, every single scrape you make, a malach is made who comes and he comes to plead on your behalf in Shemayim, on behalf of Bnei Yisrael. So every single scrub you do as you're praying for Pesach, malachim are being created on your behalf. That's what Yitzchak ben Berdichev says. So that's a very positive thing. Additionally, one of the Lubavitch Rebbes, the Maharash from Lubavitch, so he says that on Rosh Hashanah one time, after So it was one time it was Rosh Hashanah, and I believe Yitzchak Miberditchev was saying his tefillah after Tekiyah Shofar, and which we say after Tekiyah Shofar, if you remember in the Machzor, we have a little tefillah we say that the malachim created by the blows of the shofar should go up to the Kisei Kavod and plead on our behalf. So he went on and he said, Av Masuk, Av Rachum, he says, my sweet father, my merciful father, if the malachim which come out of the shofar that I blew, which are such weak malachim, they can go before you, Hashem, and plead on our behalf. They're created for my avoda. So he says, think about the amount of work put in before Pesach. And as Klal Yisrael is busy with their scraping and their cleaning and their scrubbing and their kashering, imagine the malachim to come out of that. So if the shofar, with a few little blows, create all these malachim on behalf of Hashem, so all the work you put in to get ready for Pesach, imagine the malachim created through that. So that's a very empowering thought as we do sit there and clean. One other Hasidic Shemaisli says, the Rebbe Meir from Premishlin, I don't know who that is, he says that when you take your ear and put it to the stone used to kasher your Pesach kelim, you can hear Tekiya Shofar. And he says that, meaning the same way that Tekiya Shofar is there to take prosecution in Shemayim and flip it into Rachmanis, into compassion, so too in Bnei Yisrael, in specific the women who work so hard to prepare for Pesach, they are mamtik dinim. They're able to take the din in Shemayim and flip it into Rachamim. So they're looking at it as somewhat of a Tekiya Shofar, to clean for Pesach. So again, I'm not here to tell you that you should be so machmir. I just want to put into context. You know, the context is that, you know, there is a certain minug and concept of chumrah and Pesach which is there, and we have to realize the importance of and how terrible chametz actually is, and, you know, the great mitzvah that we do as we do prepare for Pesach. So going overboard is not recommended. It's not good for us. But to realize that all the scrub cleaning we do does have a big impact in Shemayim. It's part of our avoda. We look at it as hard work in terms of cleaning, but it's avodas Hashem. And it's all preparation for a mitzvah. That's what it's all. You're involved, you know, as you start cleaning. Some of you have already started. As you start cleaning, you're already involved in the mitzvah of tashbisus from batechem to rid yourself of chametz, of bayir by matzei. It's all preparation for all these mitzvos. So you have to realize that every single scrub and every single vacuum and every single thing that we move around, that's all part of the mitzvah, the mitzvos of Pesach, and it's avodas Hashem. Now the question is, well, of all mitzvos, you know, why is Pesach a place where we're so machmir? Why is chametz so bad? And that's an important question. And the truth is, really, it's the Torah that began the chumras, the Torah itself, because there's no other prohibition in the Torah that we have by matzah on. The fact that you can't possess chametz is a big chiddush. You can't possess avodah zara, and you can't possess chametz. I mean, that's, I don't know if anything else you can't possess. Other things you can't benefit from, you can't use, but to have it just in your house, you know, I think the only two I can think of is avodah zara and chametz and Pesach. Nothing else has that same issue. So the Torah itself is extremely machmir on chametz. Additionally, eating chametz is chayav kares. Other isuri achila, very few have that severe punishment. A pork chop is not a chayav kares, and neither is shrimp, and neither is a cheeseburger. They're not chayav kares. You know, as much as Jews look at shrimp or cheeseburger as taboo and terrible and off limits, they're not chayav kares for eating them. Chametz on Pesach is chayav kares for eating it. It's similar to eating Yom Kippur. It's chayav kares. I mean, it's something very, very serious. So the Torah itself has put an extremely serious prohibition upon chametz, which might be the reason as well why we are so machmir to get rid of it, because look how strict the Torah is about chametz. But why is chametz so bad? And it, just to put the question, I guess, in the proper framework, we know that the Jews, when they left Mitzrayim, they left in a rush, famous story, and the bread, no time to rise, so they had matzah. So that explains why to eat matzah. It doesn't explain why not to eat chametz. I mean, it doesn't say they didn't have any chametz. It could be they had some in their pockets, and maybe they had some, and the kids had some crackers. Like, I don't know. It just says they ran out of Mitzrayim, and the bread didn't rise. That's all. So we eat matzah. But what's so bad about chametz? So many, many Rishonim point out that chametz, at least symbolically, has a lot of very terrible connotations. Chametz is considered a very terrible thing. I guess I'll start with the Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, it says there's a tefillah of Rabbi Alexandri. Rabbi Alexandri was one of the Amorayim, and he used to say a tefillah after his davening. He would add in a special tefillah. He would say, Ritzonil asos sotzon avinu shvashemayim. He says, Hashem, our will is to do your will. He says, Mam akiv, but what holds us back? If all we want to do is your will, Hashem, why do we have so many challenges? Why can't we do your will? He says, two things get in the way of us doing your will. He says, Shibun Malchios, the fact that we are subject to the Goyim, we have to live in Golos, we have to deal with pressures from the outside. And he says, Or Shabi Isa, the yeast in the dough. Chametz holds us back. So obviously it's a mashal. I mean, I don't think the bread is keeping us, making us say Lashon Hara or something. Like, you know, I don't think the bread's doing that. But Rashi says that the source of Issa, the yeast in the dough, is a mashal for the Yetzer Hara. It says it's the Yetzer Hara is machmitzenu. The Yetzer Hara causes us to become chametz. And so we look at chametz as a mashal for Yetzer Hara. The chametz created Yetzer Hara in a number of ways. Number one, chametz is a concept of, let's say, extra luxury. I mean, if you were to compare matzah to chametz, so matzah is just straight flour and water. There, it's, you know, it's small, it's not fluffy, it's not quite as enjoyable as bread. It is what it is. When it comes to there's a parish on the Haggadah called the Yad Mitzrayim. Yitzchak Eisenhower writes this, and he says that matzah to us represents the idea of living simple in life. You know, not being too involved in different pleasures of Olam Hazeh. So matzah is a very simple food. Chametz is already saying, I want to have a little more pleasure in life. I want to get more involved in Olam Hazeh. It's the world of Tainug. It's more of a luxury to have chametz. Chametz is luxurious, relatively to matzah. Chametz also represents to us the idea of dimyum, of fantasy. Because in terms of the substance between a piece of bread and a piece of matzah, it's the same thing. It's flour and water. The difference is that the bread develops more air inside of it. You know, it's really just an illusion. In terms of the mass of flour and water, it's the same. It's just that the bread expands and the matzah remains the same. I mean, you could say the bread's full of hot air, as it were. It's fantasy. It's not reality. So I think I'm having something that's much more pleasurable, much more enjoyable, much bigger. But really, what's making it that way is air. It's something which is not visible, which is not real. It's fantasy, and there's no more substance here, and everything. But really, matzah is substance. Matzah is mamash. It's real. It's substantial. That's what matzah is. So chametz has this concept of Yitzhahara in terms of fantasy. So chametz represents physical pleasures, tainug, luxuries. Chametz represents dimyon, represents fantasies. It also represents gaiva. Many Rishonim point out that chametz represents gaiva in the fact that it's blown up. You know, it's like we say, you know, somebody's very overblown. And that's what chametz is, overblown. Matzah is just its substance. Matzah is very humble. And chametz is something which is overblown, and it's very full of itself. That's what chametz is. Literally, that's what it's like. So so chametz has a lot of very negative connotations in Klal Yisrael. It's interesting, I just saw recently the word Yisrael, so you can break it up. If you remove the letters Sin, Aleph, and Resh, which is Seor, which is sourdough, which is chametz, you end up with the words Li, Lamed and Yud. And Hashem says, if Klal Yisrael would just take away the chametz from within, they'd be mine. You know, the chametz is keeping them away from me, so take away the Sin, Aleph, and Resh, you end up with the Lamed and Yud, and then you're mine. So that's the word Yisrael. So you have that remez in there. But that's really the difference between chametz and matzah is a difference between reality, substance, focus on ruchnius, versus the world of fantasy, of taiva, of gaiva, and focus on things that don't bring us closer to Hashem. The Pesach is the time where Klal Yisrael is in its infant state. And we're just made into a nation. And like Chazal look at it as uber me'ima. We're like a fetus inside our mother just being pulled out. That's the way that's described. So when you feed a baby, you're very careful the baby eats, because the baby's just developing. I'm certainly a fetus. You know, a mother has to be careful with what she eats when she's pregnant, because the baby's developing, and the wrong things affect the development of the baby. As we get older, so we're already developed, so we can handle different types of things. It won't impact us in the same way, at least not in our roots. We might feel sick from it, but we get better, we're the same people. Whereas when it comes to a newborn, or it comes to a fetus, you have to be very cautious of what it's exposed to, because it's just developing right now, it's not strong enough to fight. So Klal Yisrael and Pesach is infant state, and Klal Yisrael is just developing. You have to be sure that down in its roots, in its shrushim, we only feed it the purest of foods. So on Pesach every single year, we don't want to get the chametz into our system, because we're just growing into a nation, we're just born and we're newborns. That's how we view ourselves on Pesach. And therefore, and Chas V'Shalom, at that point, we don't want to impact our development. That's how we view it every single Pesach. And then the fact that the Seder, the mitzvah is Yigat L'Vincha, supposed to teach to your children. But the mitzvah is not exactly accurate, because if somebody has no children, or to the Seder, and they still mitzvah to do the Seder and tell the story. And someone chas shalom is alone on Pesach, you tell the story to yourself, is the halacha. So the truth is, we're all called children on Pesach. That's what it means. Every single Jew on Pesach is a child, because this is the newborn state of Klal Yisrael. So at that stage, be very cautious, make sure we feed ourselves the purest of foods. So we only have matzah on Pesach, not chametz. When we destroy the chametz on Pesach, there's a special tefillah to be said, which many do say. It's in the Haggadahs. And that tefillah says, here it is. Here some of Fanech Hashem Al Kim Kevaseinu. Say, may it be your will, Hashem. You should have mercy on us. You should save us from the Isser Chametz, even a drop. And then it says, Kashem should be our new Chametz, we be Seinu Israfanu. Just like we have destroyed the Chametz from our homes and burnt it. Kach is a Kainu Levayar HaYitzahara. So too, we should be Zocha to destroy the Yitzahara from within ourselves, in our entire lives. So the tefillah we have in our Haggadahs following the Bir Chametz stresses this point, that destroying chametz is linked with destroying the Tzahara. And the more we work on destroying our chametz, we should really be thinking, and certainly in the spiritual realm it's happening, that we are destroying the Tzahara within ourselves. So as I work completely for Pesach, I think about this sometimes. You know, as you go and you scrub that corner, you sweep that area, you move that cabinet, whatever it is, you think to yourself, right now I'm doing one more step in destroying the Tzahara within myself. And it should have an impact on us. It should have an impact that the more we work on ourselves and cleaning our homes, we're cleaning ourselves as well. You know, it goes together. I actually saw on the Haggadah, I'll just read you the quote. He tells a cute story. Go. From Rav Vosner Zatzal. Rav Vosner was one of the great poskim in Eretz Yisrael, in Bnei Brak. And he one time expressed, he said, I'm not trying to say anything negative, but he one time expressed that Jews would go away for Pesach and try to avoid cleaning their homes. So he says it's the wrong thing, because it's going to impact Yiras Shemayim. Because if you don't clean for Pesach, then you're not cleaning out your Tahara also. So it's important that we even if you're going away, do some Pesach cleaning, because the Pesach cleaning has spiritual effects on a person of helping to ease their Yitzhara and develop more Yiras Shemayim. So this hopefully puts cleaning in a different context. You know, it's not easy. So it's a lot of stress and it's a lot of work. But it's an avodas Hashem, and we have to see it that way. And every time we clean, we are impacting things up in Shemayim. We're being careful about a mitzvah, and we're showing. You know, we have to understand that chametz is really considered something which is serious. It's a very serious isser and has serious effects on a person. That's why it's the one Isser we have like this, that it's not even Bashishim, you can't have it, and you can't even own it, and we're so machmir with it, because that's what Chametz is. That's why I added one more halacha here. This is more of a halacha than a minhag, but just people don't always know this. There's a siman in Shulchan Aruch that says that when you are purchasing meat for Pesach, you should not say, this meat's for Pesach. The reason is because people might think that you're actually setting aside a carbon Pesach. What you could say is, this meat's for Yom Tov. You could say, this meat, we will use to eat for ourselves. You can word it other ways, but to say Basar Zeh LePesach, this meat's for Pesach, it may be confused with being Makdish a Karban Pesach, and some might think either you plan to offer a Karban or eating a Karban. So therefore, you should avoid that. As Mishnah Berurah says, that's even true for chicken or fish, even though that couldn't be a Karban. It's best to avoid that statement. So when we're buying food for Pesach, try to avoid saying, this meat's for Pesach. Try to say, this meat's for Yom Tov. That'd be the best way to do it. Easy way to do it. This in Hebrew, you can say, Basar Zeh Al Pesach. This the meat is on Pesach, I guess. But as long as you say it in a way which doesn't sound like it's a carbon, then you're okay. So just an important halacha that we should know as we prepare for Pesach. All right.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. You make your angels, yeah, right. Is that a nice thought? That's a nice thought. You know.
Thank you.